Good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please don't call in unless we ask for calls. And, of course, if you're listening on the Here's Help the radio network, the delayed broadcast. Well, it won't do you any good to call because there won't be anybody here. But right now we have with us this evening Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to be talking about, well, we're going to be talking about what's going on financially in the world again, because I think this issue is so very, very important. If you read the papers, you find out that the Merck company is going to be laying off 7,000 people. That, of course, as you know, General Motors is going to be laying off 30,000. Ford is going to be laying off 4,000. We have real financial problems in America today. In fact, if you listen to what Alan Greenspan says, he said, you know, it's illogical to increase spending and cut taxes. And then he went on to say that if this continues, it's going to create a very serious backlash in the system. He points out, of course, that the long-term interest rates on T-bonds is staying very low, and he scratches his head and he pretends he doesn't understand why this is happening. In other words, buying Treasury bills are debt. We have about, well, the equivalent of $8 trillion in debt, and about $4 or $5 trillion of that is being financed either by people here in the United States or people overseas. And, of course, the higher the interest rate, the more this is going to cost the money. More money is going to cost the government. They pretend that they don't have any idea why this is happening, and I suspect that they're doing with the long-term interest rates exactly what they're doing with the stock market. They're manipulating them because if the prices were to go up, the interest rates were to go up, they'd have to put out more money, and a lot of this would go overseas. And quite frankly, they cannot afford another couple of $100 billion interest on the massive national debt that we have accumulated. So everything's being manipulated, but you can only continue manipulating it so long. And then eventually the whole house of cards begins coming down. They have manipulated the price of gold and silver for many years, so we would have nothing to exchange. And the system works very well as long as you have the reserve currency and everybody has to play by your rules and you can create money out of nothing. But what happens when you finally get to the point where other countries won't play the game anymore, and when they begin accumulating gold and silver to back their currency because they're interested in stabilizing their economy and their citizens having having some sort of a cushion when the whole system collapses? Well, that seems to be where we are. Gold hit $500 a day today, and first time in some 18 years, the price of silver is up, price of platinum is up, in the face of a rising dollar. Melody, what do you make out of what's going on?
Well, you just said everything just perfect. I can throw my notes away, Dr.
No, you go right ahead. Yeah. We want to hear what you have to say.
Well, no, I just ditto what you said. You know, it was a great day for gold today. We did hit the $500 mark, and what's real interesting, it was 500 even, and because it was closed up 90 cents today. And another interesting note, I'm not sure if the listeners had an opportunity to check out some of the numbers, but for the NASDAQ today, it had closed, I saw it many different ways, but it closed down 6.66. So, you know, every once in a while you have to bring out those three digits if it fits, and I think it absolutely does.
In other words, the number 666 does have a certain amount of significance. We're going to be back in just a moment with Melody, and we're going to be talking about what's happening financially and what you better do to prepare for the coming perfect financial storm. Well, Melody picked the story up there.
You know, I listened to a soundbite, and it was Ron Paul. He was addressing the Birch Society, and he's very involved in the banking systems in Washington, and he's probably the only one that really knows what's going on, or perhaps they all know, but they've all been bought out, perhaps, except him. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, the debt of this country is totally out of control. The cuts that they Congress tried to pass, what, the $35 to $50 billion dollar cuts in spending, I mean, that's just laughable. Our $600 billion national debt is it's going to continue to rise. You know, we go back to where we lost our industrial base. I mean, the system cannot last. He continued to say that the money issue is the biggest issue of our time. And again, we often refer to our fathers, our founding fathers, as they wanted gold and silver to be the legal tender, and we should not have a Federal Reserve system. I mean, we just cannot continue. We cannot continue to finance the spending. There will be a financial situation with the change from Greenspan to Bernanke. I mean, Bernanke is just he's so far removed from reality, he's totally out of touch with what's going on. I mean, perhaps he makes a great puppet, but as far as a Federal Reserve chairman, my doubts are there, but he'll do what they want him to do. And so the only way that we can get a restraint on our government, on the administration, is eventually we will have to be on a gold standard. When that time comes, I don't have a crystal ball, but it will happen. And because you cannot have the government that continues to spend the money and continue to print the money that it spends. And it will come back to haunt us. And the only way the listeners can protect what they have worked so hard for, is by owning gold and silver.
Well, I think it's very interesting to go back and certainly look at what Bernanke was saying back in about 2002. He gave a very famous speech. In fact, that's where, of course, he got his name, Helicopter Bernanke, because he was talking about how, you know, when you have a gold system, why, a government really can't manipulate the economy. But when you have a paper system, the government can print all the money that it wants. And if you are looking, you start to get into a deflation and the economy begins to contract. Why, you can print all the money you want, and then then he quoted somebody else who suggested, you start throwing it out of helicopters, everybody's got money, and you don't have a deflation. But what does that do to the value of the savings and the pensions and the annuities and the insurance? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan and Pelletier was just saying that she is deeply concerned that we are in a very, very difficult time in our nation's history because we have irresponsible government spending. We're cutting taxes, and you can't cut taxes and increase spending any more than you could lose your income if you were an individual and continue spending. One of the days why you come to a day of reckoning, what most people don't understand, is that between 1965 and 1985, the dollar lost 3/4 of its value. Now, then, of course, between 1985 and the present, it's only lost a third of its value. So that seems like we're really making a great deal of improvement. But what people don't understand is from the time America was founded in 1789 until 1913, prices were stable. There was no inflation. There was no deflation. They had a little inflation during the Civil War, but prices were stable. And that's what you really need for a stable country. And in 1913, with the advent of the Federal Reserve System and the ability to create paper money out of nothing, and then, of course, to throw it out of helicopters to stimulate the economy, what you did was lay the foundation for the total disruption of our economy. So, you must be talking to a lot of people, Melody. What are those people saying to you today when they probably are calling you and asking you about gold and whether it's a good purchase or silver, or what do you tell them?
Well, you know, by the time they call, they understand that there's something seriously wrong with what's happening out there. They realize that one and one is not equaling two out there when the government comes out with their reports, because they go to the grocery stores, they spend, they know what the prices are, they see the rise. I had someone says, well, you know, a year ago I could have bought hot dogs, you know, the very food that families now have to eat because they can't afford decent meat. He says you could buy a pack for $1.50. Now it's $3.50. And so it's beginning to hit people in the pocketbook, and they realize that they have to protect what they have. They realize that their paper investments, Wall Street, they realize it's being manipulated. But still, Dr. Stan, that is just such a small fraction of the people that are taking the step to call to protect what they have. Look at the people out there. We used to call them the GDP, the generally dumb public out there. They're the ones that are asleep, the ones that have been caught up in the illusion that has been produced by Washington. They don't know what's going on, and they will lose everything because the Wall Street, they will not allow people to have their funds. It won't happen. People are not going to have their pension funds. They cannot rely on the investments that they have now. They have to get a balanced portfolio. If they continue to stay in paper, they need to offset that paper with something that is real, something that will perform and do the opposite. When their paper goes down, gold will rise. It will protect them over the long term. Both gold and silver will do that.
I really think that's so important for people to understand that we are in the terminal stages of what happens whenever a nation has gone into a fiat money system. Now, they tell us that inflation is very, very low. It's been 2%. Maybe it's up to 4% with the increasing price of energy, but it'll probably come down again when energy prices come down. And ladies and gentlemen, they've been lying to us. I mean, they actually removed the price of food from the evaluation of inflation. They removed the price of health care from the inflation. They removed the price of everything that's going up, and they keep in the products that are coming from communist China that has their yuan or won fixed to our dollar. And then they say, see, look, we have the consumer price index, and it isn't going up. But I would simply ask you, are you going to believe what the government tells you? Or are you going to believe your lying eyes? We have inflation because we have a fiat money system. And throughout history, every fiat money system has eventually collapsed. And as Aristotle said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a fiat money system as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. And even Alan Greenspan admits he is not able to control what's going on in our country today because you have a Congress that seems to be dedicated to the destruction of our economy by increasing spending for every imaginable thing. And then after they've come up with a budget that's only $300 billion deficit, then they appropriate all sorts of money off budget to bring it up. It is going to be between $500 and $600 billion deficit this year.
I don't think people really understand. I mean, it used to be millions, now it's billions and trillions. And I think the numbers have been so great that people just totally have lost grasp of the amounts of exactly what it is. And so they've actually lost touch with reality. And the only time you can keep reality is by backing your investments with gold and silver. That keeps everything level. It protects what you have, and it's so important in this day and age. And we will come to reckoning. We will have a reckoning with the reckless spending and the printing of the fiat currency that this administration, not only this administration, but the many ones before this one, has put us in. So,
well, I think all we have to do is look back to 1965, because I'm old enough to do that. 1965, silver was $1.25 or $1.29 an ounce. Today it's over $8 an ounce. Gold at that time was $35 an ounce. Today it hit $500 an ounce. If you'd put your money at that time, your money in the bank at that time, in 1965, it would buy about 20% of what it would have bought then. And you would have lost 80% of your money had you put it in the bank, and you might have got some interest on it, but then you'd have had to pay income tax on that interest you had. Had you actually just had it in the form of gold and silver, it would have dramatically increased in relationship to prices today. So, I think that people have to realize we're living in very uncertain times. And there is no security in any monetary increment. That's why people like Warren Buffett are getting out of the dollar and invested overseas. That's why people like Bill Gates are getting out of the dollar and George Soros are getting out of the dollar. And they're investing either in fixed assets or investing overseas. But the average American is being told by their financial advisor, oh, don't listen to those gloom and doom people. Listen to me because I'm from Morgan Stanley, or I'm from Citibank, or I'm from Chase Bank, and I'm here to, I'm looking after your interest, not mine.
Did you see the Goldman Sachs, the Christmas bonuses that they're paying their people? It totals $11 billion. $11 billion. If they gave each employee a bonus at Christmas time, each one would get $500,000.
Now they must be doing something very good for Goldman Sachs.
Obviously, and I'll tell you, and it's sad because people don't realize, a lot of people got hurt when the NASDAQ was at 5,000 and it dropped. They lost a lot of funds, but they can't seem to come to terms to withdraw their funds from the stock market. It's like people are afraid to take control of their finances. I had a gentleman tell me, he says, I lost a lot of money. He says, for the past 4 or 5 years, the market might go up 10%, but maybe I make 1%, so he wasn't able to have his funds returned from him. He wasn't able to recoup. He says, so why was I there? He says, but once I finally withdrew my money, he says, I had to realize that I lost that money. And I think that's what happens to a lot of the people. They're in that same boat. Once they make that decision to withdraw their funds from the markets, they have to come to this realization that they're not getting their money back. However, he does have an opportunity, because now he took that money that he finally withdrew and he placed it into gold and silver. And we're still on the bottom rung of that ladder. And all the predictions for gold in the next couple of years, we'll be seeing 800, we'll be seeing 1500, and we'll be seeing 3000. So he has a very good chance right now to recoup his loss and still profit very, very well and keep his purchasing power as we see the as we see our monetary policy collapse.
You know, there's a fellow named Richard Russell. Mm-hmm. And Richard Russell, he's been about this for about 30 or 40 years. It's a stock market analyst. And he, at one time, made a prediction that the price of gold and the stock market would cross. And, of course, that's just about what it did in 1980. He's made that prediction again. In other words, he's thinking that gold will go up and the market will come down and the price will cross. And whether it'll be at $5,000 or whether it'll be $3,000, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see if his prediction plays out, because he thinks the stock market is being totally manipulated. The government, and working in concert with some of the big banks and the brokerage houses, are manipulating the stock market. And everybody says, look, things haven't fallen apart. It's all a matter of perception. You can manipulate the stock market very readily, this with a few purchases, and create a feeling euphoria in the minds of the people. But it all has to do with the minds of the people. Nothing to do with the value of the stock.
Not at all. I mean, we have a economy that is based on 2/3 of consumer spending, people spending, and that spending is all from debt. So, I mean, you have to keep those people that are doing the spending in a good mood, because if they quit spending, there goes our economy. And not only do they have to keep these people in a good mood so they continue spending, they have to keep those foreigners to continue investing in this country in order so that we can pay our debts.
And we have to actually get $3 billion every day lent to us from other countries to keep the House of Cards from collapsing. And what happens when those other countries get very angry with us for one reason or another? What happens if Communist China wants to destroy the economy of their enemy, because they look upon us as the enemy? Right now they need us to buy their goods and to lend them the money, but what happens if their attitude changes? Well, I think there are a lot of uncertainties out there. These are the most uncertain and exciting times I've ever lived through, and I've been around for a long time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back here in just a moment with Melody Cedarstrom, and we'll invite your questions here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Melody Cedarstrom, and we're certainly talking about what's going on and what people are going to have to do if they're going to survive in these uncertain times. How should people be investing? Certainly, some people say, well, invest in gold stocks or silver stocks. Other people say, you want to have the metal in your hand, and you really can't necessarily trust the stocks. And then, of course, there's some people who say you want to have collectible coins, and other people say you want to have bullion coins, and some people say you want to be in silver, and others says no, you only want to be in gold. So, what do you tell people?
Well, you know, anyone who pushes any one single item, whether it is one of all the ones that you just mentioned, most likely that's what they want to sell you. And we do take a different approach here, because I do things the old-fashioned way, and it's really based on each individual. I don't try to sell one item to every customer. It is based on the investment abilities, the budgets, the customer's mindset, what they believe in, and it's my job to explain the different products, what the different coins do, what gold stocks, their risks, what silver, maybe some of their risk, the volatility of silver. And so that's the approach that we take at Discount Gold and Silver Trading.
All right, fine. Well, I think, of course, everybody has different needs, and I think it depends upon your age. I think, of course, it depends upon, how risky you want to be. Certainly, there's a certain amount of risk investing in the stocks, although, of course, there's the potential for a tremendous gain. But what about the idea of getting collectible gold coins? There's some of these coins that go for $5,000 right now. Is that a good investment?
Well, again, it depends on where you're coming from. collectible coins got a very bad rap in the 90s because a lot of coins were sold to the wrong people. They were sold at the wrong price. And it was sold at the wrong time, because in the 90s we were certainly in a down market. Certainly we had gold rise a couple times above 400, but all in all it was a down market. And the real high-grade rare coins in which what was being sold, they're very volatile. However, in a good market like we are now, some of those higher-grade coins will perform nicer. They will perform with greater returns because we're in that market. We are in an uptrend, and they do perform greater. And again, it comes back to that person and their ability and what they want for their investments. If you're in for a short term, if you want in and say, well, I want to be out in a year, then you definitely want to go with gold bullion, and like a Krugerrand or a Gold Eagle, Maple Leaf. But if you're looking for a longer term and you want to go into something that's a little more speculative, I have MS63 $10 Indians, and I'm just talking a common year date, nothing real rare about it. They perform 65% in 2 months. Now, that's a gain that you can't ignore. And there's a lot of coins that I believe are set to take off, that you don't have to go into that real high-grade rare coin where you're paying $4,000 and $5,000 a coin, unless you are that person who enjoys purchasing the coin for the coin. You like the history, you like the coin, the design. You are actually a true collector. So a lot of those collector coins were sold to people that did not deserve to own them.
Well, now, of course, my understanding is that right now a lot of people, because the price is up, are beginning to sell their gold. Is that true? Are you running into people who are trying to unload now? They've been at it for, well, hold your thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and talking to Melody, I asked her the question, what do you think people ought to be doing? Should they be getting collectible coins? Should they be getting bullion coins? Should they be getting gold stocks? Or should they be getting silver coins? And Melody said it really sort of depends upon what's going on. And then I commented that I'd heard that right now, with the uptick in the market, that people are actually selling gold. Some people have been at it and holding it for 10 or 15 years, and they're just sort of mad at it because they've held it all this time and hasn't done anything. And so some people are actually trying to unload now, and I talked to one dealer who told me that there are actually more sellers right now as gold is going up than there are buyers. Have you run into that at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. You know, before gold started going up, I had many clients who told me that, when gold hits 500, I'm going to sell a portion of my portfolio. But what else is there to place your money? Because what you're going to be getting is the dollar. Well, why would anybody want the dollar? What investment, what is the alternative to gold right now? There isn't anything. So why would you want to be selling your gold even though it's at 500? Even though you've been sitting on it for 10, I mean, this is the market that you've been waiting for. So why would you sell? So absolutely not. Unless you need the funds, you keep your money. And you shouldn't be trading unless you have to look at your whole portfolio before you decide to trade. Yes, there's been a lot of bad items that were sold, and perhaps portfolios can be enhanced to where your profit performance in the near future, at least you'll be able to realize one, because there's been so many products, so many gold items, gold coins, bars, silver, that have been sold at such tremendous premiums that I've seen customers where gold would have to go to 800 before they actually made a profit. So there's things that you can do to change your portfolio to ensure that you don't have to wait till it gets to 800. But each portfolio has to be looked at and determine whether it is a good deal for you to do that or not. I hear stories where dealers are out there and they'll say, oh, you know, sell all your gold bullion and get this, or sell all that and get that. Well, that might not be the best case scenario for someone, depending on their overall portfolio. I mean, I've been doing this for over 12 years. I take this very seriously. I don't sell one coin to everyone. Not one portfolio is the same. And that is how you will make the most on your investment when you're purchasing gold and silver.
Well, now, what about older people? What should older people be doing? Because, you know, they're certainly not in a speculative position. They're looking forward to security for the retirement. Maybe they've thought they're going to get their pension from Ford Motor Company or General Motors or Delphi or many of these large corporations, Alcoa, and suddenly they find that these corporations are just folding their tent and fading into the wilderness. You know, they're moving overseas. Alcoa is, or many of the major aluminum companies are moving out of the country because electricity is too expensive. And certainly General Motors is beginning to shift its manufacturing base to communist China, where labor is so much cheaper. So what should older people be doing who are looking at possibly the loss of some of their health and pension benefits? What should they do with what they have?
We really need to sit tight. I mean, there are gold and silver 401k plans IRAs that you can purchase. If you can move some of your funds, you can put them into gold and silver because, again, we're back to security. You want something that is safe. That as the systems purge and we go through the stages of one system falling and another one rising, because another one will rise, there will be investments along the way. Right now, if you want to keep what you have, you need to be in gold and silver. I believe short-term bonds are fine. You know, I wouldn't go long-term. You can go into short-term. But again, I think, well, you know, those are government guaranteed. I wouldn't want to have anything to do with the government at this point in time. It depends on those individuals if they need a monthly income. You know, so again, we're right back to what do you need? What do you need to live on? If you're looking to go into gold and silver, you could be speculative in gold and silver at this point in time. I mean, there's predictions for gold to be 800 in the next 2 or 3 years. You know, 15 and 3,000 the next couple of years. I mean, they haven't kicked the bucket yet, so they have a great way to protect their investments and their retirement.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a couple of moments with Melody, and of course we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I believe we're in very strange economic times. I certainly remember what happened in 65. I remember what happened very clearly in 1979 and 1980 when gold started performing like it is now and got almost to, almost 1,000, about 850, something like that. Futures hit 1,000. That was the day, of course, it began to fall, never to return again. We're going to be back in just a moment with Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Melody Cederstrom, and we're talking about really what people should do. What do you feel about silver? Is silver a good investment or not?
I think silver is a great investment. Silver bugs, they think silver is money, but silver's more of a commodity and an industrial metal than money. So it is volatile, and that's why we see, you know, we can see huge movements in silver. I believe there's a group of, I'll call them silver bugs, just like gold bugs, who it doesn't take a lot of investment because the silver market is so small, it can move and spike quite dramatically. And so I believe there's a strong push in order to have that happen. My philosophy, I think silver is great to have. If you're a believer in bartering, it's a great way to barter. For your smaller purchases, it's always like the checking account. Gold is like the savings account. But I believe people can buy silver at $15. If gold went to $15 tomorrow, it's still affordable. If gold went to $800, how affordable is that? I tell my customers, buy your gold now. Get your position in gold now. Then buy your silver, because silver is always affordable. At $25, it's affordable. Even though it would have a great performance, but if silver's $25, where do you think gold's going to be?
Well, I think that we don't know. In fact, at one time there was a ratio of 16 to 1 between silver and gold. Today it's somewhere in the rate neighborhood of about 60 to 1. Silver is underpriced. On the other hand, you know, will there be demand? Will we ever see 16 to 1 again? When it was 16 to 1, silver was a monetary metal. In other words, it was used as a backing for American currency. It was used as backing for Mexican currency and for currencies throughout the world. The central bankers do not want anything behind the money. They want to be able to print all they can with ease, and they certainly don't want to be held down on any sort of an anchor that keeps them for turning on the printing presses so that they can start throwing money out of the helicopters at any time they want to. But what people do not understand is when you double the supply of money, you half its value. You triple the supply of money, why you have only a third the value. And you put out 10 times as much value, why, of course, the dollar goes down to a value of about 10 cents. So until people begin to understand there's a direct relationship, an inverse relationship between the amount of money and, of course, the value of the money. People think that they can create money out of nothing, and they do. But it destroys us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom, and she, of course, helps Radio Liberty and helps bring us these programs, not only here, but across America. And Melody, right now, I'd like you to get out your telephone number, your website, so people would know how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to.
Okay, the telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. And there is someone standing by if you'd like to call to receive some information, or if you'd like me to return your call tomorrow, you can leave a message and we'll do that. And the website is Discount Gold and Silver Trading, and is spelled out, .net. That is Discount Gold and Silver Trading, .net. And Dr. Stan, if I may, I'd like to, we spoke earlier today about the program that will be aired on WHRI. May I?
Oh, sure, go right ahead.
Beginning tomorrow, and we will be just Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we will have a program with WHRI on frequency 6.125. And they are initiating that frequency for our program, and that will be at 10 o'clock Pacific time.
That'll be just following this program then?
Yes, sir.
All right, right. At WHRI, we actually we do all of our short wave with them, and we've been very happy with them. So now, will this be a regular thing, or will they just be doing it for the 3 nights?
We're going to be doing it on a regular basis. We're just starting out on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to see how things go. But I've heard wonderful, and I've been listening to WHRI on their different programming, and I think it'll be very successful.
Well, I hope that it'll be, following ours will be an advantage, not a disadvantage. We'll wait and see, and you tell me how it goes. But anyway, that's starting now this Wednesday. That's tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
And you'll be going from 10 to 12 Pacific time. That will be Eastern time, from 1 to 3. But there are a lot of people up there and listening, and I bet it'll be a great program, because I know that you've been doing radio for some time, and really I've heard very good reports on it. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question about what we're talking about this evening. But there is no incident in all history where a nation has gone into a fiat money system where that has not eventually collapsed, because you cannot get responsible politicians. And you go back and study what happened in ancient Greece, and I cover that in my little pamphlet called The History of Money. And in ancient Greece, and we're talking 300 B.C., why, the politicians, would do whatever the people wanted. The people wanted more money. The people wanted more advantages. The people wanted more benefits. The Greek politicians, 300 years before Christ was born, did exactly what the politicians in Washington, D.C. are doing today. And that is, of course, that they gave the people whatever they wanted out of the public treasury. The only trouble was there wasn't any money in the public treasury, so they simply created money out of nothing. And they began minting all sorts of coins that had no intrinsic value, and they massively expanded the monetary supply, which is why Aristotle had observed there's nothing wrong with the fiat money system, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings, meaning that you don't expand the monetary system. In America, for 128 years, we had a solid currency with no inflation. And look what's happened since we brought in the third central bank of the United States, the privately owned central bank that is referred to as the Federal Reserve System. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Melody, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I was asking Melody what she thought about silver, and why don't you just repeat what you said about silver and why you feel that this is not a monetary metal.
Well, I believe it is a monetary metal, but it is more an industrial metal. I mean, when you have major central banks, they're not increasing their silver holdings, they're increasing their gold holdings. Just like Russia announced, they're increasing their gold holdings by 5%. So, and I believe the market demand in a great economy, like we saw, you know, well, a fictitious economy, but it was still considered a great economy in the 90s, you had a lot of computer buying and so forth in which silver was used. So we saw the price of silver outperform gold in the 90s, and then since the 2001, it's pretty much tracked along with gold. So, and a downturn in the economy, you could see, you know, when you have, you know, no one's buying computers and so forth, you can also see a decline in silver. So I believe it's monetary, but it's also industrial, and that's how you have to look at it. Silver is a lot more volatile than what gold is.
Well, I think it was so interesting to note that that the Russians were going to increase their gold holdings, as you said. The Chinese are going to increase their gold holdings. And I'm speaking now of their central banks holdings. Now, and as the countries in the West are supposedly selling off their gold holdings, and the World Bank is selling off its gold holdings, the other countries that are trying to build an economy are beginning to collect gold. The same thing happened with Argentina. They wanted to have an anchor for their monetary system so they didn't get into another wild cycle of inflation, and so they're beginning to accumulate gold. And there's certain central banks that don't want to play the game. In other words, the game works really well as long as everybody's playing it, but what happens, you know, when you're playing Monopoly and somebody says, I want a currency that has intrinsic value in it, and two or three of us are going to play a separate game, and we're not going to play it simply with Monopoly money, we're going to have something of real value, and suddenly the whole game falls apart. And that is what has always happened throughout all history, and there's nothing new under the sun. In 300 A.D., Diocletian, the emperor of Rome, began to, of course, to massively increase the amount of money, you know, to finance the wars he was involved in, and then, of course, he began having rampant inflation, why he imposed wage and price controls, just like Richard Nixon tried to do back in 1971. There's nothing new under the sun.
No, it isn't. You know, the thing that upsets me the most is that it's all by design. You know, it's all planned, it's all by design, and they will continue to... I can't imagine anything that can be done in order to turn things around. So, I mean, we are in this realm that it will be completed, and things will, the economy will unravel along with our currency. Our dollar will be, you know, the little 4% of value that's left in it, it will go to zero, and gold and silver will perform extremely well. I mean, since I was here last, gold is up 7%. For the year, it's up over 14%, and so, I mean, gold has performed extremely well. Prior to the program, I came across an article, The Hindu, where they're talking about how Tokyo and Russia and Argentina and South Africa, the hedge funds are looking to increase gold reserves. And so, again, the momentum behind gold is extremely strong worldwide, except for the people here in the good old U.S. of A., because they're blinded by the shine of their credit cards, and they don't understand what's truly going on.
Well, I think, of course, what people don't really understand is that just a couple of the hedge funds began accumulating gold. I mean, they have trillions of dollars at their mm-hmm. disposal, hundreds of billions of dollars anyway. You know, why if the supply of gold would dry up, and once you begin to get shortages, the price goes up. And I think we have just seen this really begin. I've been following this now since 1962. And I will tell you, I think this is probably the most exciting, the most dangerous, the most terrifying time I've ever seen. It was on the 17th of November when Congressman Murtha addressed the House of Representatives, and many people, our listeners, may have heard what he talked about, that we should remove our troops from Iraq as soon as practicable was this term for the resolution he wanted to introduce. Of course, it was never introduced because the last thing they want is, you know, to put any sort of a suggestion we ought to get out of Iraq. But one of the things that Congressman Murtha said is that this war is destroying the economy of our nation. And he talked about the man who was, I think, the controller of currency or anyway a government official responsible for our debt, who had testified before Congress that he was terrified. And Congressman Murtha put quotation marks around that word. This man who was responsible for reporting to Congress on what was happening to our financial system was terrified by the massive debt we were accumulating, much of that, of course, coming from our senseless war in Iraq. So, but the most interesting thing about the speech is, I defy you to go to any major newspaper and find it printed. And it wasn't. They printed excerpts of it. You'll find that the New Yorker quoting part of it, Seymour Hersh's article, but the entire article was never printed in the major newspapers. I went to the website for the New York Times that said, well, you can find the speech there, and they had no record of the speech. We got it off, of course, Congressman Murtha's website. You can get it from the Congressional Records. That speech should be read, especially where he talks about the fact that the man in charge of monitoring finances of our country was terrified by what's happening. And if he's terrified, and Congressman Murtha is terrified, and the fact that the media is suppressing that information, as I say again, try to find Congressman Murtha's speech in any newspaper. You can find it certainly at his website, which is where I got it. But they have suppressed that fact because they don't realize, they don't want the American people to realize that we're sitting on a ticking time bomb.
You know, as we see, or as I watch gold rise, I had the same feeling when I saw it go from 400 to 450 last year. Now we're at 500. It gives me such an unsettled feeling because you're right. As exciting as it is, the times in which we live, it is very frightening because gold has broken away from the manipulation of the central bankers. And that tells me that how unsettled things truly are, because gold is the indicator. And as often as you hear on the major networks and the majority of the people out there listen to CNBC and you know, the talking heads on Bloomberg and so forth, and, you know, they scratch their heads and act confused, they know. They understand. But they don't get paid to tell the truth. They get paid to continue to help the administration continue with the illusion, because they're just making billions and trillions of dollars. Well, GE is anyway, and so is Bloomberg out of New York. So as I see gold rise, things become more unsettled. So as anxious as I am to see gold reach 800, it is still in 1500 and 3000. The other side of that coin is the condition in which this country has been led and where we're at as a people.
And of course, you know, if the miners always take a canary down in the mine to see what happens, and if there's a poison gas or there's a shortage of oxygen or something, the canary dies. Well, the same thing has determined the health of our economy by watching and seeing what's happening with gold. And when the economy is strong, when the fiat money system is under control and not in danger of collapsing, the price of gold goes down. But when, of course, the economy gets sick, like down in the mine, when there's poison gas there, why the canary dies here in society, why the price of gold and the price of silver begin to rise, and despite everything the central banks and the monetary system and the Federal Reserve can do, they can't keep its price down. And that's really what's happening now. It is like the canary, an indicator of the health of the environment in which we live. So, and the tragedy is that as gold continues to rise, as our economy begins to contract, and people who have their money tied up in annuities, or in bonds, or in bank deposits, or in CDs, or all of these things, their pension funds, and they think it gives them some safety. They really don't understand, because they're not watching the canary. And I fear that when gold gets to $800 or $1,000 an ounce, and I believe it's going to get there, an awful lot of people are going to be wiped out financially. And one reason I do what I do, and I don't get paid for what I do it because I'm trying to educate people and warn them, make your preparations. Understand, see the signs of the times. Remember that, where the Lord said, when the sailor sees a red sky in the morning, he's concerned. When he sees a red sky at night, he knows that there's not going to be a storm. And I think that this is good advice. Read the times of the signs of the times. They're there, and watch the canary.
You're absolutely correct, and that's why gold is so important and why you need to take possession of it. There'll be investments down the road. There'll be things in which you can invest as things change. And, you mentioned about mining stocks earlier on in the show. Mining stocks are okay, but that's gambling. If you want to take that risk, I guess that's okay. But again, it's risky. You're speculating. I tell my customers, if you want to speculate, if you want to gamble, go to Las Vegas or Atlantic City and gamble a little bit, because that's the same thing that you're doing even in gold stocks. They're going to come under some terrific stress, because there's a lot of lawsuits out there in which the way gold is mined, there's a lot of arsenic, I believe, that is used to process gold. So there's, the environmentalists out there are placing lawsuits and so forth. So even with each mining stock, you have management that you have to contend with. You have to go through all their expenses and so forth. So you have a lot of uncertainty there. If you want something that's safe and you want to take out all uncertainty in your investments, that's why you need to have gold in your portfolio. Same way, I hear a lot of people talk about this e-gold and this computer gold. You got to be out of your mind in order to become involved in that. And I'm not saying these guys are bad guys, but how does that take away any of your risk? Everybody is breathing and waiting for the one nuclear blast to happen. If all systems fail, what do you have? How secure is that? That's why you need to have it in your pocket for this time, until these things begin to happen and we know exactly where you're at. Don't let someone else control your money. That's the whole thing about gold. You take charge of your finances. And you listeners out there, you're smart enough to do it. For years, these stockbrokers have been, you relied on stockbrokers to tell you where to put your money.
I think that, of course, is the great fallacy. And now we find out, some of them were cheating us. Some of them were actually taking advantage of the system, and were giving special favors to their friends and, of course, their clients. Were simply left out. They were taking massive payments for buying and selling, and what they called churning, and they keep buying and selling. And, of course, the only person who got rich was the broker. Let's get your telephone number out and your website one more time, Melody.
1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
All right, fine. One more time before we go to the break.
1-800-375-4188 and discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
My guest this evening has been Melody Cedarstrom, and she certainly supports Radio Liberty. We appreciate her support. We're going to be back to wrap up this evening's program, and then on to the next program. Well, Melody, we got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, get protected. Protect your assets. Now is the time to accumulate gold and silver coins. And if you want to take a little bit of a risk, you can get into some gold mining stocks. But be very careful which ones you go into. Know when to sell if you do go into them. But if you want to secure, safe, take control of your funds and purchase some gold and silver coins. and make sure you purchase the right ones. We do the best here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We offer great prices, great coins, a no-nonsense approach. We probably ship faster than anyone in the country. I know my competitors, and I know their shipping. If you make purchase one day and you get locked in on a price and you send your funds right away, most likely your product will be shipped to you within 10 working days of the day of your order. So very quick turnaround time. And I probably do the best, Dr. Stan. That I do know.
I know you have a very good reputation, Mrs. Bly. We're so glad that that you're with us and helping us. And so I feel fairly comfortable and very comfortable in recommending Melody. She's got a good reputation. Of course, in this business, I will tell you that a reputation is about all you have, and it's just as doing talk radio. Why we always try to look after our listeners. And if we have somebody that we find is not doing right by them, why, they're no longer with us. And anyway, we really enjoy having Melody with us, talking about what's going on in the gold and silver market today. And I would simply point out to our listeners that we are living in the most uncertain times, really going back to 25 years ago to 1979, 1980, when it almost looked like the whole economic system was going to collapse. We had runaway inflation. And, of course, they had to actually raise the interest rates to 22% and simply just turn down the economy, destroy the economy. The people who were overextended, as many of my doctor friends were, thinking they could play the system because they were so smart. And they were building condominiums and all sorts of apartment complexes. And suddenly they had all these houses for sale and condominiums for sale. And the banks wouldn't lend any money. And just now we're beginning to see the same things. The banks are beginning to tighten down and not lend money. And where is that going to end? Have they tightened down, Melody?
Where is it going to end?
There's going to be a lot of people out there who
yes.
have things for sale and people can't buy them because the money's not available. When we have a solid currency, this doesn't happen. When you have a fiat money currency, then, of course, when this happens, why, of course, people who are overextended get destroyed. Melody, thanks very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you, sir.
Good night, and God bless you. Okay, fine. That was Melody Cederstrom. I hope you enjoyed our program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just point out that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day. Now, if you'd like to know more about the things we're talking about, you can go to my website of RadioLiberty.com and pull down the newsletters we've written on this very, very subject, or we put together a little pamphlet called The History of Money. And people really don't understand that there's nothing new under the sun. The same thing happened in ancient Greece. It happened in ancient Rome on several occasions before the barbarians came through the gates. It's happened down through the ages. Certainly we've seen in the last 100 years numerous instances where the economy of nations has been wrecked and the people impoverished with the fiat money system. As long as you have responsible government and responsible officials managing it, it's all right. Listen to what Alan Greenspan is telling you, and he's telling you we've lost control of our deficits, and we're fighting wars and increasing spending and cutting taxes. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm all in favor of cutting taxes. The only trouble is that you cannot cut taxes and increase spending. You couldn't do it in your own home, and governments can't do it. And that is why the man who's in charge of monitoring our monetary system, according to Congressman Murtha in his speech that has been carefully suppressed, he said this man is terrified, and the word terrified is in quotation marks, and I think you should be terrified too. If you'd like a free copy of Congressman Murtha's speech, suppressed by the media because they don't want you to know that the incidence of terrorist attacks in Iraq has increased from 150 a week to 700 a week. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know how badly things are going, how demoralized our men are. You need to read what Congressman Murtha said, not what people said that he said. That's why the New York Times did not duplicate his speech, even on their website, although they said they were going to. So you have to understand that the media's control, our Our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas are suggested largely by men we have never heard of. So if you'd like to get the truth, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Pull down our newsletters if you'd like to. You'll certainly get a copy of our latest newsletter. And that, of course, goes into Congressman Murtha's speech. Why, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can read the entire speech in our latest newsletter. And then, of course, we hope that you will go to our website where you can listen to our radio programs 5 hours every day. You can listen to the archive programs. We get some great and wonderful guests who are really well-informed, guests that have information you won't be able to get from other sources. Your job is to tell other people about our programs, to encourage them to listen, to understand that behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. And there really are secret societies. There have always been secret societies. And the fact that you don't know about them is simply a reflection of how powerful the secret societies are. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, till we're together again. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. Now, if you're listening to this program on the Here's Help Radio Network, a delayed program, I won't do any good to call because there won't be anybody here. But please, if you're listening this evening, why don't call us unless we ask for callers, because we have with us Barrett Schoes, and we're going to be talking about a very important subject. The Bible as literacy a project that is to be introduced into our public schools so our children can read the Bible in public schools, read it as literature, and with that as a background. Barrett, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's my privilege.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Bible is Literacy Project is, why anybody would be concerned about, bringing the Bible into school. Certainly, if the ACLU is in favor of it, and People for the American Way, Norman Lear's anti-American group is, an anti-Christian group is in favor of it, what could possibly be wrong with that? Because we even have many prominent Christians backing this as a vehicle of acquaint our children with the Bible as literature. Sure.
Right. It would seem confusing. You know why? Certainly, many Christian ministries are promoting this and are applauding the fact that this new Bible textbook now exists because they've been wanting for a long time to bring the Bible back into the schools. I was hearing that 10 years ago, and I was getting a little nervous about what kind of Bible teaching would it be, and all my fears had been realized in this new Bible textbook that's been published by the Bible Literacy Project. And one of the biggest promoters of it is Charles Haynes, whom I wrote about in an article earlier, Twisting Truth for Classroom Consensus, because of his connections with communitarianism. And one of the people that he has worked very closely with at the American, Freedom Forum's First Amendment Center was a lawyer, Oliver Thomas, who recently co-authored a book for the ACLU called The Right to Religious Liberty, the Basic ACLU Guide. Now, you might ask, whose rights would the ACLU promote? And at the same time, you would ask, we also ask, what kind of truths or messages would the ACLU promote in a Bible textbook? And, of course, we need to talk about that. And I'm so glad that you're getting the message out, because right now, school districts across the country are getting this information. In Texas, they have been, education leaders have been meeting several times to discuss whether or not to implement this textbook. Their last meetings will be on the 6th and the 20th of December. And so it's very urgent that the information comes out, and sometimes they can talk about the contents, so that the school districts across the country and the Christian parents won't be pushing this textbook, because it's going to do exactly the opposite of what we would like to see happen. It'll deconstruct the Bible. It will change in meanings, the meaning of the books of the Bible, and it will tear down faith rather than build faith. And so it's just a real, I would say, deceptive assault on the Christian community across the country.
And I think the gullible Christians are so glad that the ACLU and Norman Lear, People for the American Way, want to bring the Bible into our classrooms. Well, Barrett, why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, certainly. Yes, let me give you some examples. For example, here's one of the questions that it asks. Do you think Adam and Eve received a fair deal as described in Genesis? This is in the first section on Genesis. And it goes on to say, Eve did not know good from evil. How could God blame them for disobeying? Now, what kind of answer would children be likely to give, or teenagers be likely to give, when the question is asked in that way? It's really a setup for saying that, no, God shouldn't be blaming them, and he isn't being fair. Here's another question. That question, by the way, was on page 38. Here's one on page 156. If God allows evil things to happen, can God honestly be described as good? This puzzle remains essentially unsolved, though various believers in various times have developed their own ways of resolving or living with this paradox. And now the students are going to, in their small group, use a dialectic process where you have diversity. And, of course, you will have diversity in the classroom these days, because the mass immigration has created what the United Nations has been looking for as far as social capital in every community, diversity and creating unity in diversity through the dialectic process. This is part of the aim of this curriculum, is to sort of create a oneness, a solidarity. Everybody can have their own gods, but we have to sit down and dialogue and come to some consensus about what gods are like and what is our common ground. And so that's how this will be used. And of course, when the questions, in a sense, have built-in suggestions that tear down God's sovereignty, God's love, God's justice, God's holiness, we know what's going to happen in the minds of the students, and there will not be very many students who are familiar enough with the Bible to take a stand.
Well, of course, that question that you raised, you know, if God allows evil to happen, can God be good? And certainly should he judge people, you know, who do the wrong thing, since he allowed the evil to happen, as if somehow the evil is God's fault. And I think you're absolutely right. The children will have no idea how to respond.
And those who would know how to respond, the few that actually know Scripture, would have a Scripture in their mind that would show who God really is, they will hesitate to speak up because they will already be trained. Children are being trained from kindergarten upward now to think dialectically, to think in terms of the group and how does the group feel.
Hold that thought right there, Barrett. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Barrett Chosen. Barrett was giving us a few examples out of this book. Give me the exact title of the book, Barrett.
It's the Bible and its Influence.
The Bible and its Influence. It is part of the biblical literacy project that is being forced and brought into our schools under the auspices of prominent Christian leaders and the ACLU. And People for the American Way, and what other organizations are backing that?
Well, I don't have the whole list of it, and I couldn't find it on their website. I just know that those two are backing it, and several Christian ministries have come out in favor of it. One of them has changed their mind and has agreed now that it isn't so good. I'd like to just mention the community, various, for example, the communitarian website, Amitai Etzioni, founder of the Communitarian Network, his website endorses it, and various others that I've looked at will endorse it. I don't have that list in front of me right now.
All right, but certainly the Communitarian Network. Another word for communitarianism might be communism. It's very close to kids, sort of a kissing cousin, and they agree with it. So we should be very, very suspicious of anything that they and the ACLU and Norman Lear support.
Right, and I would like to mention, maybe this is a good time to mention it, about half of the board of advisors, for example, are active members of the Communitarian Network, of Amitai Etzioni's Communitarian Network. And Etzioni has worked closely with Gorbachev. In fact, he's been a speaker. And if you go to Michael Gorbachev's World Political Forum, which it's a forum that apparently has replaced his former State of the World Forum that we talked about several times because I used to attend it when it was taking place in San Francisco. Now his World Political Forum includes various members of United Nations, the former head of UNESCO, such as Federico Mayer, who headed, as I said, who headed up UNESCO, and Amitai Etzioni is one of the speakers also, with a very nice biography on Gorbachev's website. So it becomes very significant that, for example, three of the people who are advisors on the board of advisors at the Bible Literacy Project signed the responsive communitarian platform, and they have two of them actually works with the magazine that Etzioni puts on there. They're editors for that magazine, so we're seeing a very close affiliation to UNESCO and to Gorbachev and the whole communitarian agenda, which it is communistic as far as its basic ideology. But it has taken on a different it doesn't call itself communism. It doesn't call for state control of all organizations and business and so on. But it calls for controlling to partnerships. Again, it's the same thing that Peter Drucker called for. You have to have a three-way partnership where you have partnership between the governmental sector, or the which is the public sector, the private sector, which is also called which is business, and then the community or the civil society or social sector. And as both Peter Drucker and Rick Warren have pointed out, the key organization within the social sector is the church, the churches around the world that can function and provide the service needed for the New World Order's welfare system. And so we're seeing partnerships continually form between churches and government and business and government and civil society. But at the very top of this pyramid, which is made up of the three sectors, we have the government, we have the United Nations at the peak of this pyramid, this massive global system, and they will set the standards and determine what kind of people do we want to have in the world, what kind of people will be able to function in the new society, live in solidarity, get along with each other. And the key point to bring this about, to bring this vision about eventually, will be to break down all those beliefs that they would call fundamental, those that believe in absolute truth, because absolute truth doesn't fit into this new world of continual change.
And of course, I think that what's so important is that Christianity stresses the importance of the individual and the individual's relationship to God.
Right.
What they want to do is break that down, yes. And we will do away with the individual. He becomes sort of a communitarian, part of a common, part of the communal society, and of course, he will have his allegiance not to God, but to the state. And so it would appear, Barrett, from what you've said, that the whole thrust of this book and the whole program put out by the Biblical or the Bible Literacy Project is to destroy the child's faith. And you commented during the break that one of the questions they ask the children, and I don't know, what age will these children be?
Well, it's going to be teenagers.
Right
now it's designed for high school. This curriculum is a high school curriculum.
Well, one of the questions you proposed is, you know, if God allows evil, then, of course, is God good? And can God punish people who, participate in evil when God allows evil? How many high school students would be able to reason that through and come up with a biblical answer? And that's really what this is all about, isn't it?
Right. And the statistics show that teenagers and children and even adults, but especially teenagers, they do not know the Bible. Churches don't usually teach a Bible anymore. The emphasis is on having fun and telling stories, storytelling, and they don't know the scriptures that will allow them to take a stand for any particular belief. So they're so ready just to flow with this transformation, to go along with whatever the group decides, and to determine that the group, pleasing the group, is far more important than pleasing God.
All right, now, then how are they going to get this program into the schools? Because
this is why what you're doing is so important in getting the message out to Dr. Stan, because this has gone out to superintendents and education leaders across the country. It's in the hands of the states now. They have not published a teacher's guide. And since this basically depends on the dialectic process, I would guess that they're holding off on the teacher's guide because that proves even more the problem with this curriculum and how it will be used, how it will be implemented in the classroom. And so school districts are deciding right now, in the case of Texas, it's going to be before Christmas. I haven't had any personal contact with leaders in other states to find out what's happening there, but parents need to check and see what's going on in their state concerning this curriculum and voice their concerns.
And I think really what's so important is the realization that this is being pushed to destroy the religious faith of our children. First of all, they train them as far as evolution. Evolution is not a theory, it's now a fact. And certainly any effort to mention that there is this idea of creation or design, divine planning, or that there has to be some order, there has to be some sort of mechanism or creator for this whole intricate system of life and society. That's not to be allowed at all. The child is indoctrinated in evolution. If you believe in evolution, you cannot believe in the Bible.
Right.
And then, of course, the next step now is to take them into this philosophical discussion with the dialectical process. Under the dialectical process, you have people arguing back and forth. You have an idea, you have a counter-idea, but you have to have a facilitator who's guiding that. In other words, the teacher would have a specific program in mind, but Barrett's pointing out that they haven't published what the teacher was going to do. In other words, who will teach this? What will be the real objective? Because it doesn't do any good to just discuss these things. So you have to have a plan at the end, or the child hasn't learned. And do you really think the ACLU and People for the American Way want our children to learn that the Bible is the inspired word of God?
No. And everything you said fits together. Evolution is important. One of the reasons so many people will not look at the scientific facts that argue against the kind of, certainly against Darwin's theories, and I won't go into that right now. I've written an article on that, but we have lots of information on our website. But the key is that even before Darwin came back from the Galapagos with all his information and data, social evolution was sort of a driving force in much of British elitist society, and they wanted scientific proof of their philosophical evolutionary thinking. And so Darwin's theory was actually grabbed on as something that can prove that man will continue to evolve in mentally and spiritually as well as physically. And so this whole evolutionary theory fits in with the United Nations continually bring out, and that is that we're living in a world of continual change. The whole workforce development that's preparing students for a global workforce is based on preparing students for continual change, which means you can't be grounded in anything. You can't take a stand on facts or truths that you're not willing to adapt to the next step or the next opening up of a book with more information. You have to always be willing to, again, dialogue toward a higher consensus, a higher synthesis. And it means always joining together opposites. And so you need to have opposite views in the classroom. This is why, but again, as I said, United Nations measures social capital in every community across the country. North Dakota was the lowest one year when I was in North Carolina, and somebody said, no, there's no such thing. Nobody's being measured for social capital here. And it happened that the next morning, in that newspaper in the community I was speaking in, somebody brought a newspaper clipping about social capital. And it's interesting that year the lowest city was in North Dakota, not because they didn't have unity, which is one of the and people belonging to the similar groups, but because they didn't have a diversity to begin with.
Hold that thought right there. Well, Barrett's talking about this concept of social capital. You cease to be an individual. You simply become a cog in the new social order, in the new world order. And they will have a new world religion. And there really are people who are planning to destroy America. They have a different version. They don't believe in the individual. They believe everybody should be controlled by the bureaucracy, by the elite. They don't believe in God. They would replace the God by the state. So you were just saying that you had been in South Dakota, and suddenly somebody brings you in an article on the social order.
Right. And then
I guess, what was it called now? Human capital, right?
Yes. Yes, they were measuring human capital as well as social capital. But the social capital, in fact, when I was in Istanbul for the UN Conference on Human Settlements, I was able to ask Ismail Serageldin, the vice president of the World Bank back in 1996, what do you mean by social capital? And he explained to me into my microphone that it was the measurement of the amount of human relationships, people relating in groups, unity in diversity. And he said, but it can't be the wrong kind of relationships. In other words, you don't want to have groups that are not using the dialectic process and might promote something that would be contrary to the kind of unity that the United Nations is seeking and measuring everywhere. I want to just read one quote that, in a way, shows what we're talking about. This is by Federico Mir, who was the UNESCO, the secretary director of UNESCO at that time. And he said, the mission of UNESCO is that of advancing international peace and common welfare. We have witnessed the resurgence of nationalism, the growth of fundamentalism, and this is a real problem here, and of religious and ethnic intolerance. The roots of exclusion and hatred have shown themselves even deeper and more tenacious than we had feared. Peace requires the intellectual and moral solidarity of mankind. And I want to give you one more quote from UNESCO, because this is so important, what they're trying to do, because it fits right in with this textbook, new textbook on the Bible. In UNESCO's 1995 report called Our Creative Diversity, which I have, in fact, I brought that back from Istanbul that year I was at the Habitat 2 conference, and it says, education must inform, but it must also form. It must provide them, the students, with a sense of meaning to guide their action. Education must promote rational understanding of tensions and the processes involved, critical awareness, and provide the basis for the analysis of concepts that will prevent chauvinistic and irrational explanations from being accepted. Now, if you apply that to the dialectic group that's going to discuss from different points of view whether the Bible is good or bad, whether God is fair or not fair, students have already been learning to think in terms of continual change, that there are no absolutes. The public schools have created the postmodern generation and its rejection of absolute truth, and they have already created minds that will resist what UNESCO calls irrational explanations from being accepted. It's a setup, and this is going to be just one more. The Bible is a key problem for UNESCO, for United Nations and its goal of solidarity, because God tells us that there will be a division between those who live in the kingdom of God and those who are of the world.
Hold that thought right there, Barrett, please, and we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barrett was basically pointing out that the Bible, Christianity, is a barrier to this dream of creating a new utopian order under the new ruling elite. And those people who are intent upon destroying society as we know it, who are replacing individual freedom with collectivism, a belief in God with a belief in relativism, hate Christianity. And that is why, of course, Christianity is under attack today, but these people are so disturbed that they do not control the minds of all of the children. And so that's why I believe that they want to bring this Bible as literacy program into the schools to certainly ferret out the last vestige of belief in absolutes and to question everything. After all, God, if he allows evil, how could he be a good God? And all of these questions that would puzzle even philosophers that they might argue about. But what can a high school student do? And why would you ask a question like that unless you were trying to destroy their faith? Would that be fair, Barrett?
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you, share some other questions that are in statements from the textbook. For example, quote, here's, Jesus was seen as an example of self-sacrifice that can be imitated. On your own, try to find examples of such Christ figures in literature, film, or even music. Now, in this case, I mean, for many, Gandhi would qualify as a Jesus figure in the last century. I don't know who else they would, you know, but you can go into films and you can find all kinds of heroes. Now, students, I'm not told to find Christ figures, not from the Bible, but in today's popular culture.
But of course, how could you have a Christ figure? Christ was God.
Yes.
That is a basic Christian belief. There has never been another like him. There never will be another like him. And yet, of course, what they're trying to do is simply marginalize him and make him like any other figure or self-sacrificing figure.
Right, exactly. Here's another one that ridicules biblical warnings and prophecy. Quote, "You have probably seen a cartoon or movie depiction of the prophet of doom, a shaggy, bearded individual in ragged robes, ranting from his soapbox, or wearing a sandwich board that reads, 'The end is near.' Try your hand at doing some apocalyptic writing." Now again, it's just, I mean, we have prophets in the Old Testament who spoke for God, and they were honored as people who followed God and dared risk their lives. Many of them were stoned and killed for taking a stand, an unpopular stand, and warning the people that they couldn't go on their merry way and enjoy all the idols of the nations around them. They were hated, but here now they're ridiculed as shaggy-bearded individuals ranting from the soapbox.
And, of course, the children then are to do some apocalyptic writing on their own. In other words, why don't you try prophesying how bad things are going to be, as if we are capable of doing that. I mean,
right.
Any time we anticipate the future, we base it upon the biblical stories that are there and God's warning about what happens to a nation that turns against him. But, you know, for the child to begin doing that, the immature child, then, of course, minimizes the lessons of the Bible, and his writings are just as good as those of the inspired scriptures. So all of this is really aimed at undermining the validity of the scriptures, isn't it, Barrett?
Absolutely. Here's another one that redefines biblical terms. I mean, God talks in terms of good and evil. Those words are used in the Bible so that we will understand what brings about the things that are good will create a good society. If you have a community of people who love God, follow what he calls good, love what he calls good, and avoid evil. The scripture in Isaiah 5:20 is appropriate to remember, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. But here's a question now. Do absolute good and evil exist? And so again, you're going to have your teenagers sitting in the group, speaking from diverse perspectives and point of view from different religions, and they're going to talk about first what is good and what is evil, how would they define it, and does it exist? And they're not going to come up with biblical answers. And I'm sure that, again, a lot of Christian students who would be involved in these groups may or may not know the Bible, but as they sit there and listen to what sounds logical from the different voices, their biblical understanding is going to shift.
And of course, if you have a teacher, and if she is not a Christian, then they are going to direct the discussion into an anti-Christian venue. Would anybody, of course, want to turn their children, allow them to attend classes on the Bible that were taught by people who hate Christianity? I mean, it's bad enough what we do now, where you aren't allowed to mention God if you are a Christian, but I think the harm that could be done by people who hate Christianity, directing these dialectic courses and undermining the faith of our children. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Barrett Schoes, and we're talking about the Bible as literature courses that is being suggested. The book has already been written. The textbook has been written. But the teacher's guide is unavailable. Why would any school district, actually take on a program if they didn't know what the teacher's guide was going to say and what the thrust of the educational program was going to be?
I think they do it on the basis of who endorses it, and they will have a number of people looking at it, and the book itself, which I have in front of me, is beautiful. It's very large, required special shipping, and it has beautiful pictures, but some of the pictures are very disturbing. For example, one is by an Oriental artist who's drawing a picture
based on the Old Testament, but it also has Buddhist images in it. So that, again, is an example of somehow bringing, you know, suggesting that you can bring together Eastern religions, Western Christianity, and blend the two into the kind of symbol that would represent the new global solidarity, the union between East and West, the coming together. It accomplishes what you probably have talked about Kurt Levin, who was one of those behavioral scientists that came from Germany right back in 1939.
Well, actually, of course, there were a number of them came over. They were transformational Marxists. Yes. They wanted to use the educational program to transform people into Marxists. And of course, one of them working right along with them was a man named Peter Drucker, who was
Peter Drucker, Adorno, Kurt Levin. I have a quote by Kurt Levin, which I think fits right in with what we're discussing. And again, if our listeners can keep in mind that these behavioral scientists from Tavistock Behavioral Institute in London and from the Franklin Institute in Germany were both places where they were working at finding ways to accomplish mass control. And Kurt Levin wrote, let me read the quote by Julian Huxley, the first head of UNESCO. This is the one I was thinking of. Julian Huxley, in the book that he wrote and was writing when actually the year that he became the head of UNESCO back in 1990, he wrote, the book was published in 1996.
Well, I want to say our listeners, all of them, to hear it. So let's just hold for just a moment until we bring all of our stations back on board here at Radio Liberty. Just hang on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barrett is pointing out that a lot of these ideas that we find, in this whole movement come out of people like Kurt Lewin and Peter Drucker, and these were people who'd come from Europe. They were transformational Marxists, some from Tavistock, which was the thought control, a unit in England financed by the elite who want to transform the world, others from the Frankfurt School in Germany. And they, of course, prior to the Second World War, came to the United States, and they got into our universities and began using them to transform America, to change our attitude towards God and family and country and individualism. And of course, working right along with them was a man named Julius Huxley, the first Secretary General of the UNESCO, and the brother of Aldous Huxley, who wrote The Brave New World, telling about the wonderful dictatorship that was coming. So pick up the story there. You had a quotation from Julius Huxley?
Yes, Julius Huxley. And he said, quote, "We must shun dogma, whether it be theological dogma or Marxist dogma. East and West will not agree on the basis of the future if they merely hurl at each other the fixed ideas of the past. For that's what dogmas are, the crystallization of some dominant system of thought. If we are to achieve progress, we must learn to uncrystallize our dogmas." And that's exactly what this Bible curriculum will do, and the dialectic questions that cause students to come to try to answer from different perspectives and undermine the truth of the scripture. And the reason I brought up Kurt Levin is because he writes about freezing and unfreezing. You have to he doesn't use the words uncrystallize our dogmas, but he talks about unfreezing the mind and then filling the mind with new information or with contrary information and then freezing it again at the next point. But then, again, you'll bring in more information, so you continue with this unending transformation because you're always giving a little bit more information, move the mind just a little bit further. But it starts by unfreezing or uncrystallizing, because if people stand firm on biblical truth, they will not change. They will not begin to adapt to this evolutionary mental process.
And really, of course, it's a process of brainwashing, isn't it?
It is. Exactly. I mean, we talked about Edward Hunter before, and of course, Edward Hunter came up wrote this book on brainwashing, and one of the statements that he made in that book, this struck me, and let me just quote one statement. He said, "Even when he stands by himself, the truly indoctrinated communist must be part of the collective. He must be incapable of hearing opposing ideas and facts, no matter how convincing or forcibly they bombard his senses. A trustworthy communist must stand in an automatic manner without any force being applied. In other words, when the brainwashing process is complete, or when the subject has learned what he needs to learn in order to be part of the collective, he can hear all kinds of logical contrary information, but he will not know. His mind has been crystallized in the new way of thinking. He's been frozen in the new way of thinking, and he cannot hear the old biblical truth or any other logic that contradicts what he is supposed to know in order to be a collective thinker."
And this is what they want to do with our children, using our tax money in our public schools to destroy the faith of our children and indoctrinate them in this dialectic thought process, moving them step by step by step away from a belief in the absolutes of the Bible into the relativism where there are no absolutes, there is no God, there is only the state.
Right.
Let's, before we go on, Barrett, I want you to get out your telephone number, or at least your email and your website, so people will know where they can get this article that you've written on this biblical literacy project.
Right. Two articles: Training Students to Rethink God's Word and A More Adaptable Bible. The More Adaptable Bible is full of quotations from this curriculum, and it explains the dialectic process. The other gives the background on the people who put it together. And the website is crossroad.co. And crossroad is singular. Don't put an S at the end of crossroad, or you'll come to a Japanese gambling site, I was told. So it's crossroad.t like in Tom, O like in Oscar. If you go backwards, it's to the road of the cross.
All right, now, of course, I was rather surprised to hear that Oz Guinness, who 25 years ago was a disciple of Francis Schaeffer and the Bray over in Switzerland, Oz Guinness, who has written some wonderful, wonderful books about Christianity, has joined with the ACLU and with Norman Lear and the Communitarians in backing this concept, which is going to undermine and literally destroy the faith of so many of our children. Why would a Christian, a dedicated man of God, do something like that?
You know, I was just putting together a page on our website in that quotes and excerpts section, Dr. Stan, with statements that he has made over the years. I loved his book, From Dust to Death. And I know he worked closely with Francis Schaeffer at La Brie. He said he learned a lot from La Brie. He said more the form of dialogue rather than the content of Schaeffer's message. And that statement was a little concerning to me. But I think he was instrumental in putting together the Williamsburg Charter more than a decade ago, actually about 15 years ago. This was happening in the 80s.
And now tell our listeners what the Williamsburg Charter was and why that is so vital to this project that is underway today.
Well, the Williamsburg Charter was actually, he worked on that with Charles Haines, who was the main promoter of the textbook.
And who is this Charles Haines?
Well, Charles Haines was one of the key founders. Let me go back to the Williamsburg Charter, which was really a charter bringing together all kinds of opposing positions. Various Christian ministries signed it, lots of them. There's a long list here. I have that in front of me. And I'm not going to go through. It's page after page of people who have signed it.
Now, but what was its purpose? What was the
purpose
of Williamsburg?
The purpose was to bring Bible teaching back into the schools, and to get people from all different positions, again, the ACLU and the NEA, the Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development, People for the American Way, various church organizations, all of the people and educators across the country, lots of people were in agreement. We need to learn to think together, and so let's, you know, let's have some kind of religious agreement that we will not oppose each other, that we'll all get along and come to some kind of common ground.
How could you have
over and over again was common ground.
How could you have any agreement with the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union? The ACLU is dedicated to the destruction of Christianity.
Right, right. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, but it seemed good to those, again, who want to create a more unified society, who want unity and diversity and see that as a higher good than absolute truth. Let me just go. As soon as this charter was signed, and that was a big triumphant event, Charles Haynes took over, actually, from where Os Guinness had begun. And Charles Haynes headed up something called the Gannett Foundation.
Now, who is this Charles Haynes? Is he an evangelical Christian? Is he a fundamentalist Christian? Or is he a communitarian?
He's a communitarian. Now, he doesn't say that he's a communitarian. But again, he's quoted repeatedly on Amitai Etzioni's website, making communication and communitarian types of statements. He's quoted, his articles are there, are posted on the communitarian website, and as I said, he headed up something called the Gannett Foundation, which was a foundation by the liberal Gannett media. He worked with the...
you're talking about USA Today, the Gannett...
right.
Media, of course, this is one of the radical leftist newspapers, and he was working with their foundation?
Yes, and the name of the Gannett Foundation was changed to the Freedom Forum, and he was one of the people who put the Freedom Forum together.
It's amazing how they use
the Freedom Forum. Now he's a senior fellow with the Freedom Forum, but primarily with the First Amendment Center. And as a senior fellow at the First Amendment Center, he has worked very closely with the Bible Literacy Project and has been the main spokesman for this Bible textbook. And he's the one who also works very closely with Oliver Thomas, who's part of the Freedom Forum, and who co-authored The Right to Religious Liberty for the ACLU. It's promoted at the ACLU website as the basic ACLU guide to First Amendment principles.
All right, and so basically then what you're saying is that these people have hijacked some wonderful names like the Freedom Forum or the First Amendment Commission or Forum or, you know, a foundation. They use all of these phrases to conceal what they really want, and that is to destroy the First Amendment and certainly to destroy the Christian beliefs and the belief in the validity of the Scriptures. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is fair, and it's heartbreaking. Because, again, I've had such appreciation for Os Guinness, but as I've been researching this, it's amazing to me what's been happening. Now, you and I have talked about the Temple of Understanding before, which was housed in the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York, an interfaith Episcopal Cathedral.
Well, this is basically the place of St. John the Divine. This is New Age. It's into the occult. All of these things that you're speaking of are really part of the dark side, the spiritual force that is working to undermine and destroy Christianity. So, go ahead.
Well, for example, one of the people who signed the Williamsburg Charter was Henry Luce III. Again, I were dealing with Time magazine, and he signed the Williamsburg Charter, but he was also a member of the Temple of Understanding. The Temple of Understanding put out a newsletter, and a 1999 newsletter had this comment in it. Charles Haynes, director of the Institute, has written that growing numbers of educators throughout the United States recognize a study about religion and social studies, literature, art, and music is an essential part of a complete public school education. States and school districts are issuing new mandates and guidelines for the inclusion of teaching about religion in the curriculum. Now, this was from the Temple of Understanding. So here we know, too, that the basic guidelines, including the Williamsburg Charter and the guide that was put out by the First Amendment Center, afterwards, all of these were approved not only by Christian organizations, but by Temple of Understanding.
And I think it's so vitally important for our listeners to understand that there really is a group of people out there who have an entirely different worldview. And they've embraced, really the occult pagan religions of the antiquities. And this is beautifully covered in Constance Combe's book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. I had no idea what this was all about until I read that in the early 1980s. And then, of course, if you read so much of Barrett's writings, she will introduce you to these people who worship an entirely different God. It's not that these people are atheists at all. They just worship a different God, and I believe that's the prince of this world. And they will do everything they can to destroy biblical Christianity. And of course, that's why I believe they want to bring this whole program into our public schools to destroy any residual belief in biblical truth. Would that be a fair statement or not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's part of a plan that has been unfolding for the last century. I mean, we can go back to again, the founding of Carnegie, various Carnegie foundations and organizations that were involved with education, for example, and Rockefeller. And
don't forget Ford as well.
Yes, that came a little later, but Ford too, and Ford has probably been more active than the other two in the last 40 years or so, 40, 50 years. So, yes, this is it's a progression of gradually changing the way people think, but knowing that the best way to change individuals is to put them into groups and use group manipulation in order to change each individual. And, of course, that's what was done in the Soviet Union. That's what's still being done and has been done in China. It's amazing when you go back and read literature from 50 years ago, like Brainwashing by Edward Hunter. And, by the way, we have, for those who are listening, we do have a lot of excerpts from that book because it fits right in today. In fact, I've even compared the excerpts from that book with what's happening in education today. And everything fits, but you can see why it was so important to bring the Bible in, because the Bible allows us to take a stand and to resist conformity. I mean, it's the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, as it says in 1 Timothy 3. You have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Jesus Christ. All Scripture is given by inspiration by God, and it's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, and for instruction in righteousness. If we take a stand on that truth, we will not compromise our faith.
But of course, what they want to do is, when you're in school, to destroy your faith. Now, already these curriculum used in schools today, or are they just trying to get them in?
They're trying to get them in right now. They're aiming for getting them in across the country in the fall, in next September. But as I said, right now this is being decided. And I would like to just mention that I know of one curriculum that has been used. It's using the Bible as a textbook. They're not printing a different textbook. But it has been used in Texas and various other parts of the country. In fact, over 52 school districts in Texas were using this particular one, and if you go, it's called the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools. It has never been legally challenged because it passes the First Amendment requirements. And I suggest that if anyone would like to know about an alternative, again, if you go to our website at crossroad.to and look at the end of the article on training students to rethink God's Word, I have a link to the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public School, which is excellent. I've seen that, and it doesn't promote Christianity, but it gives a factual instruction in what the Bible says.
And of course, somebody called in and asked that, are there any of the curriculum that are good? This would be good, but you would use the Bible, you'd use God's Word. Not doing everything it could to undermine it, but to read the Bible and read the Holy Scriptures. And faith comes by hearing, and hearing from the Word of God. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barrett. Chose to wrap up the program. Barrett, your website one more time.
Crossroad.to.
Crossroad.to, right?
Yes. Singular crossroad. T like in Tom, O like in Oscar.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here. go to Barrett's website. She has so much great information there. We're indebted to her. She spends, I don't know where she gets the time to do all the research she does, but you will learn so much at Barrett Joseph's website, crossroad.to. Well, Barrett, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program, which has really been excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Go ahead. Now, what message do you want to leave with our listeners, and how are we going to stop this thing, and how are we going to expose what's going on, when especially there are so many good Christians who have been bamboozled into supporting something aimed at destroying the faith of our children?
Well, maybe the best thing would be to make a copy of our article, Training Students to Rethink God's Word, and give it to any educator, influential educator you know in your state. Send it maybe to the Department of Education of the state and say, you do not want this curriculum to go into schools. Tell other parents as well. And then, we need to pray, because, again, this is a spiritual battle, spiritual war, and we need to trust, we need to ask God, what does He want each one of us to do? And then I want to just read this final scripture, because I think this fits right in. The time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. This is in the 2 Timothy, the beginning of the 4th chapter. Will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and will turn the ears away from the truth, and be turned aside to fables. But you be watchful in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, and fulfill your ministry. And I think our ministry right now is to take a stand for the sake of our children, train our children and grandchildren, warn them of specifically the dangers of the dialectic process, and then prepare them with the key scriptures that will allow them to take a stand in this battle, wielding the sword of the Spirit. And they will know God's victory, and He will take care of them.
And for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world.
Amen.
Against spiritual wicknedness in high places. So put ye on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day.
Right, and we have a section on the armor of God for children also on our website.
And go to Barrett's website, get her information, read her information, study her information, underline it with yellow, and then go over it again and again until you can discuss these issues well and understand the target is the minds and hearts and souls of our children. Barrett Schoes, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you here as a guest on Radio Liberty.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that certainly is Barrett, and one of our favorite guests. And this is such an important program. It is the Bible is Literacy Project. It's not the divine word of God. It's just something else written by a lot of fellas and destroying Christianity. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the point when I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we, 5 hours a day, try from one angle or another to give you a common ground, and that is there is a conspiracy against God. You'll find it, discussed in Jeremiah 11:9 and Ezekiel 22:25 and the second Psalm. There has always been a conspiracy against God, and now it involves some of the richest and most powerful people in the world. And the reason that this movement towards world government has been going on as long as it has, from generation to generation to generation, is because it is energized by a sinister spiritual forces. There really is another dimension. There really are demonic forces. There really is the devil. There really is organized evil in the world today. And when you understand that, you begin to understand so much of what's going on. And what you're seeing played out over in Iraq is simply evil. Iraqis being killed. Americans being killed. But it's a great diversion to keep us from seeing what's going on here at home. Understand how our minds are being molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested by the people who control the media, The media is controlled by five mega corporations, covered beautifully in a book called The New Media Monopoly, written by a left-wing professor from the University of California. But maybe he's not left-wing. Maybe he's right-wing. He's somebody who writes the truth. And these terms, left, right, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, are simply used to confuse you, to get good people arguing. And, of course, what, the longer we argue, why, the less that gets accomplished. Understand that there is an enemy, and that enemy is organized evil. And join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived on godly principles and by godly men can long endure. America was founded as a Christian nation. You read the writings of our founding fathers, there's no question. The only way they've been able to alter this is by controlling the media. The Supreme Court has held, at least on four occasions, that this is a Christian nation. And if you've never read the case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States, we have copies of that. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge if you promise to read it. The Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States, the Supreme Court, 1891-92. Understand what's going on, please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Pull down our newsletters. You can listen to our radio programs 5 hours a day. You won't get much accomplished, but you can do it. You can get a little headset from Radio Shack, and you can walk any place in the house and listen to your program. I mean, it's a great little headset, but more important than that, why you can continue listening to these programs. You can listen to our archive programs, and then, of course, you can pull down our newsletters. We do hope many of you will consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter, the Peak Oil Point 2, it goes into the oil scam and why your gasoline prices and diesel prices and natural gas and electricity are going up. It's all a scam. But, of course, it's going to be a very expensive one. And then we'd be glad to send you a free copy of Peak Oil 2. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and then pray for Radio Liberty. And until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.